From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome back to the program. Welcome to TNT for the first time for new listeners. Wow, we are slowly but surely making progress. Can you believe it? Yeah, I know it feels a little bit difficult, doesn't it, when you look out there at the crazy world that we're living in and wondering where do we go from here? Well, the only way is up, and whilst we still may hit yet another rock bottom, it is because of the fact that you are well ahead of the curve already, which means that you will prevail and we will prevail in all of what is going on in the world today. It's a wonderful lot of progress that came through yesterday and today, and I'm going to update you on some of that information now. But in all of this, and it was wonderful having Topher Field on yesterday, who was able to provide perspective on the poor outcome yet again in the Victorian election, but I've got more to say on that in a moment, as well as the guests that we're going to have today. Barclay McGain will be on shortly. He's a young economist, very, very good analyst, and we'll be talking about a number of different issues. And in the second hour, I'm delighted to have Terry Bourdais back on the program. He is the Dutch MP and leader of the Freedom Democracy Party in the Netherlands. He is a shining light. He's unafraid to take on the establishment. And like many great politicians, he's one that we would call a Maddie. He's a little bit out there, and out there because he's calling the truth in a world of hive-mindedness. And of course, we're building our army of free thinkers. So much to talk about. Now, I'll run through some of the items, and some of them are a carryover from yesterday, but it's wonderful. 33,000 COVID fines were ruled invalid in New South Wales, and you should already have heard of that story. We mentioned it yesterday on the program. But the Redfern Legal Centre is the unlikely hero, and we're going to reach out and try and get in touch with them and speak and find out a bit more and obviously provide some encouragement. It's wonderful. And Police Officer Ben Falconer, who was only on this show a few weeks back, is granted an injunction in a West Australian court after losing his job due to defying the vaccine mandates. It means that there will be an appeal and he'll be able to and should get his job back. Ben spoke so beautifully on this program that anyone who ever had a problem with a police officer would automatically feel that we need more Ben Falconers in the force, and that might be the big difference and the big change that all of us would lead. And it'd be a wonderful day that we could look ahead in 20 years' time and see Police Commissioner Ben Falconer, and that would be something for the ages. What a terrific police officer, and we'll be talking to him in a couple of days as well. Meanwhile, the same newspaper, The West, that reported this story, and their headline read, "Vaccine-resistant officer Ben Falconer has small win in fight to prevent sacking from WA police, is forced to report that a COVID-19-infected cruise ship, Queen Elizabeth, arrives in Fremantle." I mean, what a clown show that this is by now, that they are still telling us that the vaccine works when it doesn't, and that Ben Falconer, the best-spoken police officer that we've ever heard of, brave as they come, outsmarts them all and beats them all at their own game. Terrific story and stories in all of this. The profound losses that we are now seeing in terms of deaths, of increased mortality around the world, and obviously pointing to the vaccine, is more, as Rudy Giuliani said, it will be more than we can bear. It's already more than we can bear. And we must be the strong ones in all of this to provide support and encouragement. And as much as we want the big "I told you so," that will only ever be directed at the tyrants at the top of the food chain and those that were following those orders and should have known better. But the people who have been suckered into this, all of them will be deserving of our support, our love, and our encouragement as we just go about the business of being able to provide them comfort and information when that whole information train turns the other way and they come asking us for help. How did you know will be the big question. And we'll be able to say, how didn't we know? This is where we start. Now, in other news, Dan Andrews' seat of Mulgrave, the counting continues and the reviewing goes on. And my My campaign manager, Kate Shouten, is down there involved. She's been sending me messages over the last 24 hours. And Kate used to say to me during the campaign that I was a bit of a crazy person for the things that I was saying. And she's as straight as they come. And what she's telling me out of Victoria, she says, I've never seen anything like it. It is a swamp. This is very, very promising, because if Kate's telling me this, it means that something is desperately up. And we're going to work to get Kate on the program either tomorrow or Friday with the latest information that we can get there. It's a big, big deal. Now, just on Twitter, CEO Elon Musk has sent a warning to Democrat President Joe Biden. Then those in the media attack him over his free speech agenda. Musk has warned that he has an ace card up his sleeve and he's about to play it. And this refers to the Twitter new boss responding to comments by the White House on Monday. Elon Musk says there are more and more subscribers coming online. Are you concerned about that? And what tools do you have? Well, who is at the White House that is really keeping track on this? And Karine Jean-Pierre replied that the White House is keeping a close eye on Musk and Twitter. Yeah, you bet they are, because they are the ones that are going to pay big time when the truth eventually comes out. Absolutely insane watching the machine go after Elon Musk for defending free speech, said Dave Rubin. This whole exchange is kabuki theater, from the ridiculous leading question by the journalist to KJP's obviously pre-planned response. And Musk himself says, why are so many in the media against free speech? This is messed up. This is a battle for the future of civilization, Musk asked in another post. And if free speech is lost, even in America, tyranny is all that lies ahead. Welcome to 1984. Unbelievable. Now, do you know that there are many ways that you can listen to TNT Radio? Why not stream us direct from our website on your desktop, tablet or mobile device, or download our app from the App Store? We even stream live on YouTube, Rumble and Odyssey. Got you covered on TNT Radio.
Stream us anywhere.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The most incredible politician in waiting has emerged in Arizona. Her name is Carrie Lake, and she doesn't concede after Maricopa County has certified the results. Here with more is our very own Jeremy Beck. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks, Jason. Yes, I think this is a good news story that Carrie Lake, she is sticking to her guns. She's fighting for principle and justice, and she's not going to take no for an answer there. For anyone who doesn't know, she is a former television news anchor, high-profile personality in the United States, and she was also backed by former President Donald Trump. And she put out an interesting video explaining why she disputes the vote for the Arizona gubernatorial midterm election. She said it was a botched election, and she just continued saying it's a botched election, it's a botched election. And she is quite an inspiring speech there. She said where half of the election day voting centres were inoperable, the botched election where election day printers caused mayhem across the country, the botched election where Arizonians were expected to wait in line 2, 3, 4, even 5 hours simply to exercise their sacred right to vote. And she continued, if you bring up any of these issues, you are labelled an election denier or a conspiracy theorist. They don't want us talking about our shoddy elections under any circumstances. So she's fighting. She's got a legal challenge, and it will be very interesting, Jason, to see how that goes and what that will inspire in other election races, because I'm pretty sure that there are many botched elections right across the United States, Jason.
The most amazing thing about this Arizona election is the conflict of interest that Katie Hobbs, her opponent, that didn't campaign, that refused to debate, that has a very small following, is also in charge of the certification of the election and is now threatening to sue one of the counties that is still resisting certifying. And there was a person from the Mojave County that came out and said, I've only certified this under duress. I mean, these are absolutely astonishing claims, groundbreaking claims, if anything, and a lot further along from the 2020 claims. And the Attorney General of Arizona had been looking into those 2020 claims and had found some anomalies and nothing really came of it. But this is just a duplication now, the same thing all over again. It's like the business model has worked. I feel like that what we're working out in all of this, Jeremy, is we're literally, we're now creating a map in all of our reporting and conversations in our news talk. And the way that we're able to get here on TNT, these in-depth long-form interviews, and like we had last night on the program here with Joaquin Hagopian. And Joaquin, for those that don't know, is a former West Point graduate, went to school with David Petraeus and Lloyd Austin III, became an Army officer and got out when he realized that the system was designed to lose, became a child psychologist, has worked with children who have been abused and seen both sides of it and has been able to put all together, is now a very, very brilliant writer in all of this. And in part of all this mapping now, everything is coming out in real time. And what we're learning is that these people in power are obviously controlled, and they're also compromised in different ways, whether it be through criminal action or financial indiscretion or financial dependence, because none of them have got time to campaign and none of them have got time to actually raise money. Only the very few at the tippy top who get all the power are the ones who are the big fundraisers. So what's happening is they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. They can't just get out. Very few of them will actually retire or lose or whatever it is, or you know, get out of the job that they're in. So they have to go along for the ride, and they dig themselves a deeper and deeper and deeper hole. When Katie Hobbs was asked by the Lake campaign to stand down as the certifier of the election, citing conflict of interest, she said no. In no other time in modern political history, or any time in history, would anyone have not had to stand down simply for the optics. These people, knowing that the optics are that bad, rely upon a corrupt media to ignore it and allow these optics to continue, albeit with blinkered glasses on. So our role here at TNT Radio and many of our colleagues around the world doing similar work in print and radio and video, etc., are the ones that are bringing this to the fore. So our reporting is getting better and better. Our competitors, technically our competitors, but really our colleagues, are getting better and better. The list of guests that we're getting onto the show now is bigger, stronger, and more profound. And I'm going to talk in the second hour about Molly Kingsley, who was only on the show last week, Jeremy, from Us For Them. They were directly involved with something that's landed Albert Baller in hot water. It's truly astonishing what we're seeing going on. So for all of us, we should really, as difficult as this is, we need to give ourselves a pat on the back. This is all the work of the little people, but the people standing for what is right, people who are standing for free speech. And yes, we do have a bit of a leverage now that Elon Musk is playing on our team for the moment, but we have to put all these small gains to become big gains, and we're now seeing a lot of heat on a lot of very, very nasty people in all of this, and I think we are on to a winner. Like you said, this is a good news story in what would have otherwise felt like another big loss, but it certainly isn't that, Jeremy.
Yes, Jason. Well, we just keep chipping away because the truth wins out in the end. And these people, they might have more money backing them. You know, they have the biggest banks, the biggest multinationals, the military industrial complex, the whole, you know, cat and caboodle there. But at the end of the day, the truth is much easier to defend. When they get caught in lies, they have to tell lie to cover another lie to cover another lie. And it starts to look so ridiculous, the optics that you talk about. I mean, look, the conflicts of interest are just amazing in this whole campaign. And you mentioned about Katie Hobbs' conflict of interest there, which is just so blatant. But also there's another one that Carrie Lake referred to as a member of the Board of Supervisors was chosen to be on Katie Hobbs' transition team. So there's another conflict of interest there, many conflicts of interest. I think we're at a point now, if we get a few more of these legal cases, challenges to these elections, and you know, who knows what's possible in future. But at the end of the day, this money power, the globalists behind it all, they won't give up because they're getting desperate, so that they'll push harder. But the harder they push, the more that they reveal their true nature, Jason. And that's where things start to get interesting, a bit scary too. but it gets interesting when they show their true nature. And we're in that end-game phase of this globalist agenda where they will start showing their true nature. And then the everyday people out there, they'll get to see it, because there's a lot of people who are deluded still. They still believe a lot of the mainstream narratives, the government narratives. But when the true nature of the enemy comes out, then the everyday people get to see that. Now, how will they react then? Who knows? Hopefully, they will snap out of their state of psychosis and snap back into reality so that we can save civilization.
Well, all of the above, ditto that. What's really interesting yesterday, referring back to Topher's conversation, when I asked him about whether he was a prepper or was preparing because of what you're saying, that this will get nastier. And he suggested the idea of prepping for at least 30 days of losing all services. He said even the idea of having not just water to drink, but water to cook in, water to wash in, etc. So it's a lot of water that people would need to store, but it is only for 30 days. And I find that very interesting that he's thinking of that, and it's a really good idea that many people moving into Christmas might be thinking, well, what do I do for Christmas this year? What you do is you have a great time, and you also think a little bit differently in how you might spend that money, whether it be just something for, you know, the usual fun of it, a bit of treasure and trash, or whether you think about the idea of planning a little bit ahead. It's wonderful. And equally, there's some interesting reporting out from ABC Bullion, Australia's largest bullion company, and they're reporting about how China and India are leading the world now over a period of 10 years in accumulation of gold reserves, as opposed to Europe. That's another interesting one. And they're also talking about the middle class who are storing or are starting to invest. So that is another way that people might like to spend a few dollars at Christmas, by perhaps becoming a bullion purchaser and maybe buy themselves some coins, or in fact some blocks of silver, or if they're more inclined even in moving into the gold space. It's really interesting that there are ways that we can prepare and be a step ahead of the curve at the same time. It's fantastic. So, Jeremy, great report. I look forward to the next one. We're going to take a break, and after the break, economist Barclay McGain is standing by. We're going to have a chat about all sorts of topics here on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Lynn Shaw is talking about.
Children today are the currency. They're eyeballs online for marketers. They're information. Today, children are the product, and they're being attacked on every front. Although there are a lot of organizations, nonprofits, a lot of good people, and in the government, and we're working so hard on laws and legislation, in the meantime, you cannot sit back. It's 2022, almost 2023. You have to step up. You have to protect your vulnerable children and grandchildren, and you all have to participate. The days of doing nothing, dropping the kids at school or on the school bus, and then that's it for 6 or 8 hours, over, because we have a complicit, I dare say, I'll go for it, government, definitely complicit media, complicit Hollywood, and our schools and medical community seem to be riding this wave of child exploitation. They want a lot of gender talk, but they do not want to talk about internet safety, something that is surrounding all of us, because we all live now in this digital world, and that's okay, but let's leverage it for good.
Lynn Shaw and Lynn's Warriors on TNT Radio.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of posts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Barclay McGain is an economics research fellow at the Australian Taxpayers Alliance living in Brisbane in Queensland. He's a frequent contributor to The Spectator, Cauldron Pool and Quadrant magazine on topics relating to tax policy, government waste and industrial relations reform. Barclay is currently studying a Bachelor of Economics at the University of Queensland, majoring in quantitative methods. He was involved heavily with the Australian Taxpayer Alliance's campaign to decrease the fuel excise tax, which was ultimately implemented in the 2022 federal budget. And in his spare time, he plays cricket, or enjoys cricket, politics, and navigating the ins and outs of cryptocurrency. Welcome back to the program, Barclay.
Glad to be on. And yeah, as I said, always a supporter of the show.
Oh, thanks very much. It's great to have you back. I was going to get stuck into the FTX for the moment, but because, of course, as I'm reading your intro and I realise that we talked about cricket last time and Pat Cummins, I think it's always a little bit of fun to have a little bit of a throw at the at these cricketers. I am shocked that Justin Langer is getting such a hard time in this coaching affair. I honestly thought he was the best coach I've ever seen at cricket. I was wondering what your thoughts may be as a fellow cricket tragic.
Yeah, well, it seems like, you know, I mean, they'd obviously won the T20 World Cup. They'd won the Ashes. They were the number one test-ranked team in the world. And then, yeah, it just all went kaput. And a lot of people, I guess, ruminated that it must have been a player revolt from people internally within the team. Usman Khawaja is quite outspoken. Pat Cummins in the past has expressed doubts as to whether Lang is a good coach. But then seeing the TV today, and they all seemed buddy-buddy. So, that, look, there's a lot more than meets the eye here, and I think there's going to be a lot more that comes out in the near future. But going on to the whole wokeness around Australian cricket as well, I mean, watching the coverage today, all of them just prior to the match taking a knee for Black Lives Matter, you know, it is endless virtue signaling. And I think, you know, it's a testament to the crowd size today. I think this is one of the lowest crowds to an opening test of the Australian summer in quite some time. And it is partially, not exclusively, but partially because people, the cricket Australians can't seem to get the idea that people want politics and sport to be separate. So,
yeah. Absolutely well said. And I'm glad you made that point, because that's a point that I've also made. And the crowds at the T20 World Cup in the Australian games were pathetic compared to the games that two non-Australian nations in Australia. Truly astonishing. The crowds for the Indian games, the Pakistani games were massive. And you're dead right. There is no need for the mix between politics and sport. And yet here we are talking cricket on a political channel, but making the point, don't talk about it. And there it is. And it's funny you say that. I wasn't even aware that the first test match had started. So that just shows you how disenfranchised yep. I've become in all of this and I'm not excited about it at all. Now, before we throw to the news, I just wanted to just get your thoughts on the whole FTX collapse. What are you seeing and how corrupt or how dodgy is all of this? Because it appears that the FTT coin was pretty much a Ponzi scheme. How much have you looked into it?
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, Sam Bankman-Fried, you know, he was a huge donor to the Democratic Party. And I think what he pursued, and obviously people kind of view, you know, Bitcoin and all of the cryptocurrency exchanges as like a libertarian alternative. He was the complete opposite. He was someone who was 100% in the pocket of any government incumbent party at the time. He himself had, you know, far left radical political views. And he ran his company in a similar vein. He didn't really adhere to the, you know, the fundamental idea of, hey, we want to separate and find our own digital currency away from central banks and whatnot. He was very much in the pocket of governments. And the thing that was most telling for me is that his business was actually set up in the Bahamas exclusively because of their low corporate tax rate. So even though he's donating here, you know, millions and millions, maybe even billions of dollars towards the Democratic Party, he himself was taking advantage of the corporate tax loophole that Joe Biden and so many others always talk about ending. So, you know, it's a classic case of do what I say, not exactly what I do. So, very ironic. You know, you could see I must admit I had a chuckle when you see the demise of it. But unfortunately for his investors, they've been defrauded of large amounts of money. And, yeah, there'll be a lot of people that have to answer for it.
Yeah, I have a personal friend who's lost about $10,000 of investment in FTX and was devastated to find out that she'd put, you know, technically her life savings in there looking for an investment, was sold on the idea and there it is and no real recourse to any of it, and he's just one of what would have to be thousands upon thousands of victims all around the world here. in a scheme that looks to, for mine, it looks every bit as bad as Enron, every bit as bad as Bernie Madoff, in all of this, and it needs to be recognized for what it is. The only upside to all of it is that the implication of those, all these politicians that were connected to it, both in Republican and Democrat, and the fundraising and all of it, means that something has to come out in the end, in the great wash, to realize just how these politicians move money around and how the world is manipulated behind the scenes, which I find very, very frightening. Have you got any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, no, I think it also, like, just from a market perspective, it provides a sense, now that people have seen how bad and how tragic something like crypto can go, and obviously we've seen stock market crashes and whatnot, they've seen that this can now happen in the cryptocurrency space, and they now know that there's going to be a sense of skepticism there. And that was the issue with Bitcoin at the start. It was kind of like this hype craze of, you know, a whole heap of irrational investments being made, people thinking that it's a get-rich-quick scheme. But the more that this story seems to proliferate, people would actually start to be more, I guess, conscientious investors and take a bit more time with their investors, so that when you see the stock price rise, it perhaps is a bit more of an organic picture as opposed to just being purely about hype.
Absolutely. Let's pause for news headlines. We'll talk a bit more when we come back. You're on TNT Radio.
Actually, we do have some big news.
Big news? Big news, big
news. Yay. Big news, big
news. TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. The Canadian government has outlined its enhanced military interests in the Indo-Pacific, far from its borders. Britain's new Prime Minister has declared China a rival and says the days of close economic cooperation with Beijing are over. And NATO has announced it's strengthening its presence across Eastern Europe, from the Black Sea to the Baltics, as it steps up its support for Ukraine.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
In another report in the Daily Mail today, Barclay, there was a story of a third separate crypto CEO that has died suddenly in all of this. Now, we're not implying that it's vaccine related in any of this, but it's very disturbing that a 29-year-old, 30-year-old, and now a 53-year-old Russian billionaire has died, and they're all linked to cryptocurrencies. So one wonders behind the scenes if there's something going on, if there's obviously some form of criminal activity or there's cover-up in all of it. But what you were saying before the news there was that it's all about confidence at this point. And I'm wondering if this is some sort of designed way to collapse private crypto so that it looks like that central bank digital currency is the way out of it, which doesn't make any sense to me. And the reason I'm going to just go back around here is that for an entire generation, probably your entire life, we've been told that privatization is the answer to inefficient government. And now we're being told in the side of digital hack and the collapse of FTX and digital currency, that it's the government that's going to come and save us all, which is anti-privatization. It's nationalizing or making it public. This to me doesn't add up. Something really smells. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, fundamental to what we believe at the Australian Taxpayers Alliance is a distrust in government and believing that your money is best spent in your own hands and not in the control of government. And implicitly in the idea of, you know, centrally controlled currency is the idea that they're able to manipulate it. They're able to manipulate interest rates. In many ways, the government does control measures like inflation through government policy and macroeconomic policy. And yeah, there's no doubt that the government stands to gain a lot out of the more distrust they can sow in mediums like cryptocurrency. And I have no doubt that there is propaganda outlets set to try and undermine that kind of medium. And even in Australia, we see a lot of politicians even saying that the government has to have its own kind of platform in cryptocurrency. It's kind of like that old thing of like, no, you stay to your friend group, we'll stay to our friend group, please. You know, the two shouldn't be mixing. It's fundamental to the idea of cryptocurrency that it's on its separate own medium, free from government control, and it gives privacy to its users. And the very fact that, you know, there isn't that data and that the government can't monitor it or tax it even more so, makes it very much a target for all government figures. And about the crypto CEO dying, I think I heard of two of them, maybe not the third, but It's awfully suspect. And, you know, you look at things like it's not something you ever want to confirm or deny, but you look at all the people linked to someone like Jeffrey Epstein, John McAfee, who is a renowned libertarian who spoke out against him. A lot of high-powered, wealthy people, you know, sure, some of them take their own lives, some of them have just illnesses in general, but it seems to be on a per capita basis, they are dying at far higher rates than just average Joes. So, again, there's more to meets the eye. It's impossible to say how exactly it can happen. We don't have that information to hand, but it's very curious.
Yeah, absolutely. This report, Daily Mail, the Russian billionaire 53, Vyacheslav Taran, 53, Russian billionaire, died in a helicopter crash near Monaco. And it's only comes days after businessman Toyantin Kalander, 30, died in his sleep.
Yeah, I heard of that one, yeah.
Yeah, and there was a 29-year-old one as well. Yeah, very, very disturbing. Now, whilst we before we wrap up the conversation here on the crypto for the moment, can a central bank digital cryptocurrency work with a private cryptocurrency simultaneously? Because I'm wondering in all of this, I mean, how do all these so-called cash businesses operate in the future? You're not going to shut down illegal gambling. You're not going to shut down card games. You're not going to shut down the sex trade. You're not going to shut down the drug trade in all of this just by going to a central bank digital currency. Will it be that these can actually still operate outside of this?
I think it's definitely up to consumers. And I think that eventually, you know, technology has always superseded any kind of government regulation. You know, even in the worst dictatorships, there's always been some kind of, information that has seeped through to allow for democracy to replenish, or the internet or different mediums of exchanging. Cryptocurrency is no different as a new kind of innovation. So I think any attacks from any central bank will be combated by the people in the private sector who are always looking to innovate and dodge around government policy. But that doesn't mean that the government should just keep on playing catch up. There needs to be a way in which we're able to say, no, this is for the private sphere and people to use on a private medium exchange and tax-free from government. And then for the banks to continue having their central bank exchange. And we'll see. People will vote with their feet and say eventually that, you know, I truly believe in my lifetime, we will see a fundamental restructuring of the way in which we do banking, the way in which we buy and sell things. And honestly, I'm looking forward to it as long as the government is able to stay out.
Yeah, and this is the big nasty thing, of course, because the government doesn't seem to want to stay out of anything that it can get its hands on in the and it's the control here, which is anti-libertarian in all of it. Now, the other thing when we move on from this is this thing in Australia here of the director ID. It's causing a whole lot of problems. And one of our friends of the program, Rebecca Lloyd, who runs Fair Business Australia, has never had such an uptake of interest. Hundreds of thousands of literally of visitors, tens of thousands of inquiries of people with director ID not wanting to sign up for their digital ID and all of this. Have you been following that at the ATA?
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that, it's part and parcel with what they were previously trying to pass with the Morrison government about the digital identity bill. And how do they sell it to us? They sell it to us as, oh, well, this will keep you safe online. This will keep your information safe. I think with the digital identity bill, it was more about the way in which they sold it to people was, oh, have you ever been bullied by a troll on Twitter, or have you ever been seen a nasty person on Facebook? Have you ever seen someone say something rude to you? And everyone, of course, is like, yes, and it's very emotive and they're inclined to support it. But it really is a masquerade for giving the government more information on what our whereabouts are and what we do online and whatnot. I think it's the exact same with this director ID issue. It seems to be quite concerning. So I think it's something that definitely we're going to look to push more on with the Australian Taxpayers Alliance, because honestly, the intrusions that we're seeing from government on a state and federal level, it really knows no end.
It certainly doesn't. And it's getting a lot of people out of their noses out of joint. And it was one thing to force people to take a medicine in a system that they once trusted. And clearly that trust is being eroded at a rate of knots. Anthony Fauci, on his farewell exit interview speaking tour, is putting his foot in it every which way. I'm going to report on a massive development in the next hour regarding the Pfizer CEO. Which is wonderful because he's been found guilty of making disgracefully misleading statements on child vaccination. And the story is even more profound because Molly Kingsley, another friend of the program who was on just last week, it was her organization that made a complaint based on his statements that has led to this particular result, which is wonderful. Now, Fauci is out there obviously denying what's going on, telling people to still get vaccinated in all of this. And it must be that now that the business directors who have been forced, particularly here in Australia with vaccine mandates, to take on the responsibility of the government. They must be so nervous now. I would hate to be walking around in the Qantas CEO Alan Joyce's shoes at the moment. There's a man who's completely conflicted. He's got one of the worst outcomes of the lot. He's got a sinking company. He pushed harder on the vaccine mandate than almost anyone else in the world. And now we're hearing stories of pilots dying mid-air, which is not something that's happened before, not necessarily Qantas, but they must be in a panic now because with this director ID nonsense and the mandates, whatever. Now, Woolworths also have now pulled out of their mandates. They're not mandating the vaccine anymore for staff. This is done obviously silently, but there's a whole lot in here. The trust now between the lower level company directors that aren't necessarily linked up with government and are in the pockets of each other, this would be where the friction would start to starting to be rubbed the wrong way.
Yeah, definitely. And when we saw things like mandates and vaccine passports implemented, it disproportionately impacted small businesses because, you know, for a company like, you know, let's say on Australian level, you know, Kmart or Big W, where they're hiring 30 staff at once, to hire an additional one person to stand at the door and check your vaccine certificates or check your temperature or stop people from going in or making sure they're socially distancing, it's only an extra one or two staff. But for the coffee shop, which only employs two people at a time, you know, that's an extra 50% onto their wages that they're paying staff, all to do things which were stopping a virus which actually you know, has a survival rate of 99.5%. So you know, it and there was no support for small businesses in that respect. And there was very little training given to a lot of these people because they just weren't able to roll it out quick enough. And time again, small businesses have been the ones that have been shafted, and the ATA covered that pretty extensively at the time. And another thing that I was quite passionate about being a sports follower as well was the effects on community sporting clubs. You know, I'm on the committee for a cricket club on the Gold Coast, and we suddenly, you know, had to be, you know, using hygiene products before our games and whatnot. We had to be having social distance people at the club rooms, and this is an entirely not-for-profit club. So I don't really know where they think we're going to get that money from. A lot of, you know, during the period of lockdowns, understandably, a lot of kids started not playing sport anymore. So that was already a cost that the club incurred. And on top of that, they've got this endless regulation that which really put a lot of clubs out of business. I think we looked at it was something like 18% of sporting organizations or clubs that existed before COVID are yet to start or have folded since the pandemic restrictions have started to be relaxed. So yeah, there's still a lot to answer for. We are certainly not out of the COVID hysteria in terms of the financial retributions that occurred during that treacherous 2-year period.
Oh, indeed. Look, I spent the first year of that 2-year period as my son's soccer coach, and it was expected that all parents sitting on the sideline had to wear a mask outdoors. Unbelievable. Goodness. And the look on your face. And as a coach of the under sevens, you're actually on the field with the players, and the other coaches, which weren't required to wear a mask, still wore a mask. And I was one of the only coaches on the field that wouldn't wear one. And I just thought it was absolutely astonishing that these people were just so in the pocket of but obviously the fear in all of it, but one wonders if they ever tried it again what the reaction would be, because definitely, this can only go on for so long. We're going to cross for a break shortly, and I want to come back and talk to you about China. I think that's a massive story. But before we go there, the whole idea again of energy costs, and Anthony Albanese and Chris Bowen talking about the idea that green energy is cheaper, it's the cheapest form of energy, is one of the most blatant lies ever put on the people of Australia. because what they forget to mention in all of this is that whilst the sun may provide cheap energy onto your solar panel, you've still got to buy the solar panel and still got to install the solar panel, and you've still got to have the transfer lines put in all of this, and you've still got to go mine for all the parts. Why are they being so deliberately misleading in all of this in an age where if we say one word out of place about their policies, they just take us out immediately?
Well, I think Albanese is really recognising that the pledge that he made to Australian voters, I think it was something like 143 times prior to Election Day, that there will be lower power prices under a government he leads, has just been proven to be, election desperation from Albanese. Obviously, we've had 9 years of Liberal government and he's finally swept to power. And it appears to be based on a lie. Cost of living was one of the number one issues at the last federal election, and power prices was probably the top of the list in terms of cost of living pressures. We haven't seen a drop in our power prices. In fact, they've gone higher and higher. Now, of course, he'll blame external circumstances. It seems to be the common scapegoat is always the war in Ukraine. But the idea that they keep parroting, and they still parrot this idea, they've kind of dropped the idea that energy will be cheaper. But the idea that they keep parroting about that renewables are the cheapest form of electricity, well, it's not holding up, because they consistently, and recently, just in this week's sitting of Parliament, they've passed the electric vehicle legislation, basically meaning that you can get an electric vehicle for $2,000 cheaper. And now, who does that benefit? Now, you might say, okay, well, that makes it more accessible for people who are middle and low income earners to buy a Tesla or a renewable piece of equipment. Let's be clear, electric vehicles are still well over $50,000. Most people are not driving around in a car that is worth more than $50,000. And additionally, where are you going to charge it? There are so many places, particularly in the suburban areas and the outer suburban areas where people live, and there's not an electric vehicle charging site within a 10, 15 kilometer radius. So who does it benefit? It benefits people in the inner city, again. And it seems to be this continual neglect of people in the outer suburbs and the regions. And that's why I think even if there was any silver lining in the Victorian election, it's that it was those outer western suburbs, those poorer communities who actually did trend more towards the Liberal candidates. And these were former Labor strongholds, because the seismic shift from the Labor Party, from a working class party to an inner city trendy party, has really been exacerbated under this Albanese government, definitely.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. And the other side of the thing of this whole green energy move is that these electric vehicles seem to be catching fire. There seems to be a story every single day, and they're lethal. You can't put them out. And a quick search of electric fire incidents in plug-in electric vehicles on Wikipedia, there is a section that says electric vehicle incidents, and virtually every manufacturer, there is a story from Zoche, who I've never heard of, Chevrolet, Fisker, BYD, Dodge, Mitsubishi, Tesla, Nissan, Volkswagen, Porsche, Hyundai, Audi, BMW, Renault, Peugeot, Fiat, Jaguar, and some other brands I haven't even heard of, even the electric scooters. They're all having incidents where these things are exploding. Again, this is another one of these things. If we're meant to play it so safe that we all must wear a mask just in case Nana needs to go to Kmart to get a new pair of socks or a kettle and 5% survival rate, how can we just pretend that after all of these class actions with motor vehicles and petrol tanks, etc., that electric vehicles are safe? This is just something else that, again, they just refuse to look at. These politicians seriously need to get out of our way now.
Yeah, and I think people used to, in the 80s and 90s, would talk about the size of the fossil fuel lobby and how big it was, and how big coal and big iron ore played a big part in Australian politics. By far and away, the renewables lobby, which did consist of a lot of former companies which were in the fossil fuel lobby, because they shifted due to the subsidies, is now far and away bigger than any presence that big coal or big iron ore have in Australia. And it's some of the biggest companies that are influencing our politicians are some of the biggest investors in renewable technology, because they know that that's where they get the biggest subsidies. They know that it's palatable to the Australian public, because they've believed this climate change hysteria, that anything with the word R and ending in renewable is somehow good, despite it not matching up financially, and even, as you pointed out, from a safety perspective as well, which really should be the ultimate test for any car, in my opinion, safety, getting you from point A to point B.
Absolutely. It's interesting, isn't it? We're now seeing the emergence of what we're starting to call the climate industrial complex. Let's take a break and come back with more here on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
You know, you can't make this up. There's major cold coming to Europe, meaning the U.S. has to export a lot of LNG to try to cover for them. People in the United States are already seeing their electricity prices and heating bills skyrocket as the cold wave, though expected by Weatherbell in November, and the December cold wave are beginning to take their toll. It's not December yet, but there's major cold coming. But here we go. The Biden administration is starting a new plan to create certified, responsibly sourced natural gas. This will carry a much higher price tag for Americans to heat homes and businesses, as well as generate electricity. Power costs will undoubtedly rise. The certified, responsibly sourced natural gas comes with higher costs due to a much more difficult and expensive process to ensure it's produced with lower carbon emissions to fight climate change. How will people be able to afford their utility bills? God have mercy on the United States and the rest of the world that's going to be miserable this holiday season. Whoever is designing this policy is a wrecking machine. This is meteorologist Joe Bastardi, TNT's climate and weather watchdog, asking you to enjoy the weather despite all this. It's the only weather you got.
In this day and age, everybody deserves the right to access phone and internet services. Whether you're from regional, rural or remote Australia, the Regional Tech Hub can independently assist with providing advice on connectivity options in your local area, or work with you and your service provider to resolve outstanding issues with phone and internet. And our service is absolutely free. Find out more by visiting regionaltechhub.org.au or by calling 1300 081 029. RTH is an initiative of the Australian Government delivered by the NFF.
The price of gas is so high.
How high is it?
It would be cheaper to buy cocaine and just run everywhere.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, man.
TNT.
I don't know why I thought of it, but with December tomorrow, the beginning of summer and officially the beginning of the Christmas season, I'm thinking about Christmas gifts all of a sudden. And I wondered what it would be like to give or to receive a cryptocurrency, given that you're not really giving anyone anything. And for a moment there, I was thinking of George Costanza in Seinfeld when he gave the donation to the Human Fund, which turned out to be his own fake charity in all of this. And I'm just wondering what would be worse, to get a gift to the Human Fund or to get a gift to FTX? Anyway, that's just my thought for the moment. But moving on, this week Parliament took a strange turn that now that Scott Morrison's on the backbench and all on his own, the Labor Party has gone to censure him for his multiple ministries. Peter Dutton's not having a bar of it. Now, a censure doesn't mean a whole lot. It seems to be more kabuki theatre. What's your take? Why are they going down this pathway when you know they're going to try and steal more power for themselves anyway?
Yeah, I mean, like, it is a bit rich coming from the Labor Party. But at the same time, I'm no fan of Scott Morrison, and what he certainly did during that time was complete, you know, hoodwinking the Australian people. You know, when he selects his ministry and we appoint, you know, the Minister for Health, Minister for Defence, Minister for Resources, Minister for Home Affairs, and the Treasurer, we expect them to be the ones that fulfil the portfolio, and that when the buck stops with them, ultimately, because that's their portfolio. And the amount of times that Scott Morrison, throughout his tenure as Prime Minister, would defer or pass the buck to other people within his ministry was astounding. And then we hear, obviously, after his Prime Ministership is ended earlier this year, that he was had secretly sworn himself in with the Governor General to all of these different portfolios. And it really is emblematic of the power grab that Scott Morrison wanted to have. And it wasn't just on a national level, it was internally as well. And we saw how many pre-selections had been rigged or completely butchered by the Liberal Party in the state of New South Wales with Morrison and his man Alex Hawke. So again, I feel like a broken record saying it, but it's another lesson in not trusting politicians. They will use a circumstance like COVID-19 and the outbreak as the impetus to have more of a power grab, and they won't even tell you about it. That's the staggering part.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to cross to the Victorian elections, but I think it's a really good point to jump over to China for just a moment, given these lockdowns. A building that was locked down and people died in a fire has sparked an uprising in China that's almost resembling Tiananmen Square way back in 1989. In all of this, the Australian government is silent, apart from Anthony Albanese coming out and giving a Jeanette Young style of speech saying that China is our biggest customer, bigger than the USA and the UK and Singapore and Korea combined in all of this. Well, that's not the answer we're looking for. And Penny Wong has sent out one of her staffers to make a comment as the foreign minister, which is kind of like saying, well, we'll blame that person when the time is right to not offend China in all of this. Why are we subservient to China when it comes to human rights in this particular situation, Barclay?
Yeah, it's staggering. And I mean, you see what's happening in China. It's unbelievable. I mean, obviously, we all saw before our eyes, we saw the Hong Kong protests, the uprising for democracy in Hong Kong, which spread to the mainland as well. But a lot of this is getting even more highly censored. And that is why you've seen this whole movement starting up, whereby someone just brings a simple white sheet of paper. And I know we're obviously on a radio interview, but if you just imagine me holding up a white sheet of paper, that is what a lot of Chinese students and Chinese citizens are doing at the moment, because they know that any sign that they hold up, which is in any way critical of the incumbent government, will be censored. So it is actually quite a powerful statement, just holding up a white sheet of paper. But yeah, it is quite concerning, the lack of support that we want to lend to China. And it does hint that we do have such extensive ties to them. And that is why things like energy, things like our universities, and things like home ownership do actually become a national security issue. Because if we have extensive economic ties to a government which is as gangster as the Xi Jinping dictatorship in China, you know, all of a sudden you're not going to be able to make a clear and sound foreign policy decision to say, hey, what you're doing to your citizens is not right. It's complete abuse of their individual rights and civil liberties. So it's quite concerning that we're not taking a stronger stance on it.
Very, very frustrating. But in all of this, people power and the uprising is something to behold. It's truly extraordinary what we're seeing out of China, of all places, in all of this. And let that be a lesson to all of us. Now, coming back home for a moment to Victoria and the state election, whilst it seems to be delivering a status quo behind the scenes and under the cover of darkness, we're starting to learn of some interesting anomalies in the Mulgrave counting. We've got people down there at the moment who are involved in the scrutineering of this particular counting. And we're going to have a report on this on Friday. But what's your take so far on the Victorian elections?
Well, would you believe I was actually in Victoria for the state election? In fact, I was on Mulgrave pre-poll for 3 days. Wow. And what I saw was actually quite concerning in the sense that, you know, I saw a lot of people coming out to campaign, and there was a strong anti-Dan sentiment. But the VEC were so vicious. And, you know, I'm not one to say that I saw fraud and that we should start the whole thing again. But what I saw was the VEC worker at the Mulgrave pre-poll was absolutely tight on anyone who said, hey, vote against Daniel Andrews. Apparently that was, you weren't able to say that. You had to be more positive in your approach. Well, I'm sorry, when you've suffered for 4 years as the Victorians have, people are going to be angry, and they should have the democratic right to express that. And there was a lot of heavy-handedness on pre-poll, and it is a shame that Daniel Andrews has gotten back in. But, you know, I think a lot of other commentators have said that that's because there was such a little opposition on a statewide level in Matthew Guy, and it was disappointing to see, but it looks like we're going to have another 4 years of Daniel Andrews and his dictatorship.
Yeah, well, let's hope that one of these five or soon to be six IBAC inquiries will deliver his head on a platter, as it should be, because Andrews instead looks like he's going to get a bronze statue. And if they're going to knock down statues of George Washington, one wonders how many years it will be before they knock down the Dan Andrews statue that they plan to erect as he becomes the state's longest serving premier. Truly extraordinary times. But it feels like if China's moving one way and Victoria's still deaf, dumb and blind in all of this, then perhaps it is that the swing is coming. Now, Barclay, the ATA is launching its brand new book, The White Elephant Stampede, very soon. Tell us more.
That's right. Yeah. So the Australian Taxpayers Alliance, we're launching The White Elephant Stampede. On our last time that we met on the program, we discussed it, and it is a look at some of the biggest policy management and budget blowouts on 10 state government and federal government projects in recent history. And the thing that was most staggering to me is that I'd heard of a few of them. We had things like the Olympics, how much we blew out money on the Olympics and things like that. COVID Safe App, remember that one. But the thing that was most concerning to me was the ones we didn't know about. And that is because whenever there is a blowout in the budget or a project management failure, they try and sweep it under the rug as best they can. So the more that we can convey to people that, hey, these are your taxpayer dollars, you know, spending the hundreds of millions of dollars, some of these, the better. And we've got the great Senator Amanda Stoker, or former Senator Amanda Stoker. We hope that she's back in the parliament one day. She's launching it for us at the Norman Hotel in Woolloongabba, and that's on December 5. So if we've got any Brisbane-based listeners to TNT Radio, I'd urge you all to come down, say hi to me and the team at the ATA, and of course, get your book signed by former Senator Amanda Stoker. It promises to be a great night.
No, wonderful. So I can't believe it, but the Australian Taxpayer Alliance, through their book, The White Elephant Stampede, is putting the cool back into fiscal. How about that for a gag before we go? That's wonderful. And who knows, give the gift of intelligence this Christmas by purchasing your own copy of White Elephant Stampede. What a wonderful idea. Barclay McGain, it's been wonderful to have you back on the program. I look forward to speaking with you, hopefully before Christmas again, for yet another update of what's going on and a look around the world. It's terrifically insightful, and best of luck. And we're going to have your boss, John Humphreys, on next week as well, which will be really cool to get another update. Now, we're going to go to news, and coming up after the break, Darren, and then Dutch MP Terry Bourdais will be here. I can't wait for that. News next. You're listening to TNT Radio.